It was a pipe dream. The little accountant had looked straight through Lily and seen what she wanted more than anything. Freedom. The ability to live her own life. And then dangled it in front of her like a cheap toy. Lily Mayhew, nay Freeman, had been weak all of her life. But she had never been dumb.
"I won't break,"
she whispered silently into her crossed arms, into the wetness of tears.
"Please, just this once, let me not break."
The door opened with a hollow clang, and a hulking man with a soldier's buzz cut came in, carrying a tray. Lily sat up eagerly, hating herself, but she was too hungry and thirsty to stage a hunger strike. She guzzled the water, then attacked the meat, a cold lump of unidentifiable off-white gristle that didn't seem to taste like anything at all. The food only made her more hungry. And then it was done. She pushed the tray to one side, staring at the grey cement walls around her. The accountant had told her to think it over. But now she could think of nothing but all of them. Tyr, Dorian, Jonathan. Where were they now?
"With the ships," her mind answered. "Wherever the ships are, that's where they'll be."
Lily felt certain that this was true. Tyr would let Parker loose. And now Lily saw exactly how Parker fit in with the program. He was a distraction, a smokescreen for security. While Parker was wreaking havoc, Tyr's people would board the ships, and then they would leave.
"Leave for where? There's nowhere to go. Do you really think he'll sail off the edge of the earth and straight into paradise?"
Lily did. The image was eerily persuasive. An entire flotilla of ships, all of them heading toward an unknown horizon where the sun was just beginning to rise. This vision didn't feel like Lily's. Rather, it was as though someone else was dreaming inside her head. Did any of them know what was on the other side of that horizon? No. Lily felt certain they had no idea. They would probably end up sinking in the middle of the ocean. Did she really want to face everything that the accountant threatened for that?
Tyr, Dorian, Jonathan.
The door clanged open again. The accountant had returned, and he stood over her, smiling broadly, his hands tucked behind his back. "Well, Lily, what's it to be?" She looked up at him, sweat misting her brow, her guts sick with anticipation. But the words came out strong and clear, not her own words. And Lily suddenly felt as though there was another woman inside her, someone trying to hold her together, to get her through. "Fuck it. Let's go." Chapter 13. September 1st. Faustus.
"Come, I think hell's a fable."
Mephistopheles.
"Aye."
"Think so still,
until experience change thy mind."
Dr. Faustus. Christopher Marlowe. Pre-crossing Angleterre. When Kelsey broke free this time, Mace was with her. Both of his arms were locked around her waist, dragging her back, and Kelsey saw that she'd been heading toward the great double doors at the far end of her audience chamber.
"Was I going somewhere?"
"God knows, lady."
"I was, but where?"
The answer came. Her mother's face, beautiful and faultless. Mace released her, and she gestured toward the door. "Come on, Lazarus. Let's go down to the portrait gallery."
"Now?"
"Now. Just you and me." Penn's face stiffened, but at a nod from Mace, he faded back toward the hallway. Kelsey couldn't afford to worry about Penn's feelings now. She checked her watch and found that it was past 1 in the morning. She was running out of time. By unspoken consent, they did not take Mace's tunnel this time. Instead, Kelsey marched out her front door, down the long hallway that fronted the Queen's wing, and into the keep proper. They had run out of extra rooms long ago, and now even the corridors were lined with people, most of whom seemed to be wide awake. The smell of unwashed bodies was dreadful. As Kelsey went by, they bowed, murmured, reached to touch the hem of her dress. And she nodded in acknowledgement, barely seeing them, secure in the knowledge that if anyone tried anything, she could end him in an instant. An old woman blessed Kelsey as she went by, and Kelsey glimpsed an ancient rosary wrapped around her gnarled fingers. The Holy Father would scream if he knew that one of those was still knocking around. No one in the Arvaf wanted sinners to be able to tell their own grace. Seeing the milky cataract that covered one of the woman's eyes, Kelsey reached out and grasped her hand before moving on. The flesh there felt bone dry like scales, and Kelsey was relieved to let it go.
"May great God protect and keep you, Majesty," the woman rasped behind her,
and Kelsey felt something turn over inside her. Did they not know that she was going to die today? How could they not know that? She quickened her steps, determined to reach the portrait gallery before Lily took her again. She could feel Lily's need now, Lily's pain, eating into the edges of her mind, trying to drag her back. And for a moment, she resented Lily. Wondered why she couldn't pile her sorrows on someone else.
"Has there been word of Father Tyler?" she asked Mace.
"No. All I could find out is that he and a brother priest vanished from the Arvath several days ago. And the Holy Father is livid. He's offering £1,000 for Father Tyler, alive."
Kelsey halted for a moment, leaning against the wall. "If he hurts Father Tyler, I'll kill him, Lazarus."
"You won't need to, lady. I'll kill him."
"I thought you didn't like priests."
"Why am I here, lady? You no longer need protection. I could drop you in the middle of the dry lands and you'd likely walk out unscathed. These people are no danger to you. Why have you brought me along?"
"We started out together."
They rounded a corner and began to descend a new staircase, this one smaller than the main stair and circular where the main was square. People had crowded onto both the top and the bottom of the staircase, but they scrambled out of the way as Kelsey approached.
"You started off with all of us."
"No.
That morning with the hawk, you remember? That's when I first knew I was the queen, and it was just you and me." Mace glanced sharply at her.
"What are you planning, lady?"
"What do you mean?"
"I know you. Your scheme."
Kelsey veiled her thoughts, willing them out of her face. "When the sun comes up, I mean to go down to the bridge and try to parley."
"The terms were non-negotiable."
"Nothing is non-negotiable, Lazarus. Not if I have something she wants."
"She wants this city and all of its goods in plunder."
"True. It may not work, but I have to try. I'll take only 4 guards with me, including yourself and Penn. Choose the other 2.
"Perhaps not Penn."
She halted, turning to face him. They were near the bottom of the staircase now, only a few turns to go, and Kelsey lowered her voice, mindful of the people who were undoubtedly below.
"Something to say, Lazarus?"
"Come now, lady, a besotted man makes a poor close guard."
"Penn's not besotted."
The corners of Mace's mouth twitched.
"What?"
"For a woman with remarkably clear vision in most areas, lady, you are stone blind in others."
"My private life is not your business."
"But Penn's professional life is. And just because I'll tolerate some things in the safety of the Queen's wing, doesn't mean I'll tolerate them elsewhere."
"Fine.
It's up to you whether he comes or not."
But Kelsey winced at the thought of Penn's reaction to being left behind. Was Mace right? Was Penn in love with her? It seemed impossible. Penn had his woman, and although Kelsey had her occasional possessive moments, the woman served a purpose, allowed Kelsey to feel as though she was doing no harm. She didn't want Penn invested in their arrangement.
She wanted it to be private, something that never needed to be dragged into the light of day. She wished Mace had not said anything. No point in fretting over it, she reminded herself. Everything ends in a few hours. The portrait gallery was full of people, at least several families sleeping on the stone floor. But a few sharp bellows from Mace did the trick. Parents scrambled to their feet, grabbed their children, and were gone. Kelsey shut the door at the far end of the gallery, and then it was just the two of them again, Mace and Kelsey, the way it had been at the beginning. Kelsey went to stare at her mother's portrait. If her mother had been standing before her, Kelsey would have grabbed her by the throat, torn her hair out by the roots until she screamed for mercy. But how much of their current nightmare was really her mother's fault? Kelsey thought longingly of those early days in the keep, days when blame had been clear-cut. Why did she give me away, Lazarus?
To protect you.
Bullshit. Look at her. That's not the face of an altruist. Sending me away for fostering was utterly out of character. Did she hate me?
No.
Then why?
What is the point of this little expedition, lady? To whip yourself with your mother?
Oh, hell, Lazarus, Kelsey replied wearily. If you're not going to talk to me, then go back upstairs.
I can't leave you down here.
Of course you can. As you pointed out yourself, no one here can harm me.
Your mother thought the same thing.
Queen Alyssa. Nothing but trash in the finest silk. Look at her.
Call her all the names you like, lady. She still won't be the villain you wish her to be.
Kelsey whirled to stare at him. Are you my father, Lazarus? Mace's mouth twisted.
No, lady. I wish I was. I wanted to be, but I am not.
Then who is?
Has it ever occurred to you that you might not want to know?
No, that had not occurred. For a moment, Kelsey pondered the worst people it could be. Arlen Thorne? The Holy Father? Her uncle? Anything seemed possible. And did blood really matter so much?
She had never cared about her father's identity. Her mother was the important one, the one who had wrecked a kingdom.
Kelsey stopped pacing, looked up and found the portrait of the beautiful queen staring down at her. The favoured child sat on her lap, smiling brightly, no dark corners. And behind the beautiful queen's skirts was the other, the dark child, the bastard, not loved and not special. Parentage did matter, Kelsey realized, even if it shouldn't. Pain stabbed into her vitals and she cried out, doubling over. It felt as though someone had kicked her right in the guts.
Lady?
Another blow, and now Kelsey shrieked, cradling her stomach. Mace reached her in two steps, but he could do nothing.
Lady, what is it? Are you ill? Injured?
No. Not me. For Kelsey suddenly knew. Somewhere, centuries away, Lily was paying the price for her silence. Lily needed her now, but Kelsey shied away, cowering inside her own mind. She wasn't sure she could face Lily's punishment. She didn't know how she would come out of this thing on the other side. Would she have to feel Lily die? Would she die herself? Lazarus? She looked up at Mace, seeing both sides balanced in equal measure. The angry boy who had emerged from the unimaginable hell beneath the gut, and the man who had given his life in service to two queens. If something happens to me...
Like what?
If something happens, she overrode him, you will do several things. For me. She paused, gasping. Bright, searing pain scorched her palm, and Kelsey screamed, clenching her hand into a fist and pounding it against her leg. Mace moved toward her, and she held up her other hand to halt him, gritting her teeth, fighting through it, blind with tears.
What's doing this to you, lady? Your sapphires?
It doesn't matter. If something happens to me, Lazarus,
I trust you to look after these people and keep them safe. They fear you. Hell, they fear you more than they fear me. Not any more, lady.
Kelsey ignored his comment. The pain in her palm had lost its sharp edge now, but it still throbbed hotly in time with her pulse. Kelsey closed her eyes and saw a small metal rectangle gleaming in the bright white light, recognizable only through Lily's memories. A cigarette lighter. Someone had held Lily's hand to the flame. Not someone, Kelsey thought. The accountant, a man of whom Arlen Thorne would have thoroughly approved. And Kelsey wondered suddenly whether humanity ever actually changed. Did people grow and learn at all as the centuries passed? Or was humanity merely like the tide, enlightenment advancing and then retreating as circumstances shifted? The most defining characteristic of the species might be lapse.
What else, lady?
She straightened and unclenched her fist, ignoring the mouth of seared flesh that seemed to open up in her palm. If he's still alive, you will find Father Tyler and keep him safe from the Avarth.
Done.
Last, you will do me a favor.
What's that, lady?
Clean out and seal off the creche. Mace's eyes narrowed.
Why, lady?
This is my kingdom, Lazarus. I will have no dark sub-basements here. Through Lily's eyes, Kelsey saw the warren of fluorescent hallways inside the security compound, the endless doors, each of them hiding agony. Her palm throbbed. No secret places where awful things go on, things that no one wants to acknowledge in the light of day. It's too high a price, even for freedom. Clean it out. Mace's face twisted. For once, Kelsey read his thoughts easily. What she was asking would be terrible for him, and he didn't think she knew. She put a hand on his wrist, clutching the leather band that held several small knives. What's your name?
Lazarus.
No. Not the name they gave you in the ring. Your real name. He stared at her, stricken.
Who?
What's your name? Mace blinked, and Kelsey thought she saw a bright sparkle in his eyes, but a moment later it was gone.
My first name is Christian. I don't know my surname. I was born in the gut, to no parents at all.
Fairy-born, so the rumours are true.
I will not discuss that phase of my life, lady, not even with you.
Fair enough, but you will clean the place out. The room wavered before Kelsey's eyes, torchlight becoming electric for a moment before fading back. She wanted to see. She didn't want to see. She heard Lily screaming. Kelsey clenched her fists, willing the past away.
You talk like one condemned, lady. What do you mean to do?
We're all condemned, Lazarus. Kelsey's head jolted as a blow landed across her face. Lily was beginning to lose hope. Kelsey could feel despondency creeping in, a deadened numbness that echoed all through her mind. You might need to take me back up, Lazarus. I don't have long.
We can go back through the tunnels.
Mace played with the wall for a moment, opening one of his many doors.
Where do you go in your fugues, lady?
Backward. Before the crossing.
Backward in time?
Yes.
Do you see him? William Tyr?
Sometimes. On her way through the door, Kelsey reached up to touch her mother's canvas, the painted hem of her green dress, feeling rogue regrets surface in her mind. No matter how hard she tried to hate the smiling woman in the portrait, she would have liked the chance to speak to her, at least once.
You knew my mother well, Lazarus. What would she have thought of me?
She would have found you too serious, lady. Alyssa wasn't one to feel anguish on behalf of others, let alone of circumstances that couldn't be changed. She surrounded herself with similar people.
Was my father a good man? A pained expression darted across Mace's face, then was gone so quickly that Kelsey might have imagined it. But she knew she had not.
Yes, lady. A very good man.
He gestured into the darkness.
Come, or I'll end up carrying you. You got that look about you.
What look?
Like a drunk about to pass out.
With a last glance at her mother's portrait, Kelsey followed him into the tunnel. Through the walls she could hear the murmur of many voices, even in the middle of the night. People too worried to sleep. They were all in equal danger now, low-born or high-born. The army outside the wall would not make distinctions. Kelsey tried to picture the coming dawn, but could get no further than the end of the New London Bridge. Something was blocking her vision. Burning fire spread through Kelsey's arms, a tingling pain that moved on to her chest before attacking her legs. The pain intensified, and Kelsey halted in the darkness, unable to move. She had never felt anything like this. Each nerve in her body seemed to have opened up wide, become an infinite conductor.
Lady?
Make it stop, she whispered. She squeezed her eyes shut, feeling tears leak beneath the lids. Mace fumbled for her in the dark, and Kelsey grabbed his hand, clung like a drowning man. I don't want to see. She couldn't hold herself up, felt as though her nervous system had collapsed. All muscle control had gone from her legs. Mace grabbed her, lowering her softly to the ground, but the pain didn't stop. Every cell seemed to be on fire, and Kelsey screamed in the darkness, writhing on the rough stone.
Take them off, lady.
Kelsey felt him tugging at the chains around her neck, and she slapped his hand away. But she didn't have the strength to fight him off. None of her muscles were working correctly, and the pain controlled everything. She tried to roll away, but could only wriggle helplessly on the floor.
Quick, damn it!
Mace dug a hand beneath her neck and lifted her head from the floor. Strands of hair ripped from her scalp.
A warning,
the dark part of her mind whispered.
That's all he needs.
She concentrated on the hand that held the sapphires, first pressing, then digging. Mace grunted in pain but did not let go, so Kelsey clawed at him now, opening up scratches.
I know how valuable your hands are, Lazarus. Don't make me take them from you.
Mace hesitated, and she pressed even harder, digging inward toward the muscle until he swore and scrambled away. Kelsey pulled herself into a sitting position, then rested her head on her knees. The pain had begun again, in her legs this time, and she realized now that she had no choice. Lily's time was an open doorway, and there was no going halfway through.
Lazarus! She croaked into the dark. Lady.
I'm going back. I can't stop it. She stretched out on the floor, feeling the blessed coolness of stone against her face.
Don't try to take them off while I'm gone either. I'm not responsible for what might happen. Keep telling yourself so, lady.
She wanted to snap at him, but now Lily was upon her. Lily's mind slipping inside her own the way a hand would slip inside a perfectly fitted glove. The pain had faded again. Lily had taken refuge in her own imagination, her vision of the better world, fields and a river seen from atop a hill. Kelsey recognized the view, the Almont, as it looked from the hills of New London, and the Cadell stretching into the distance. But there was no city yet in Lily's dreams, only the wide open land running toward the horizon. A clean slate. Kelsey would have given anything for that land, that opportunity. But it was too late.
Had enough yet?
Kelsey barked laughter, a helpless dog-like sound. She looked up and saw the grinning, sharp-like face of the accountant. And the laughter died in her throat.
I said, have you had enough?
Lily blinked as sweat ran into her eyes, stinging and blinding. She had found that once she answered an innocuous question, it became that much easier to answer a question that mattered. Now she held silent.
Ah, Lily, the accountant shook his head sadly. Such a waste of a pretty woman.
Bile collected in Lily's throat, but she swallowed it down, knowing that if she got sick, it would make everything hurt more. She blinked the sweat from her eyes and shot a glance at the assistant who controlled the box. A tall, bald man, with dead, watery eyes that seemed to focus on nothing. The assistant had come and gone many times, bringing pieces of equipment or notes which the accountant would read quickly, his eyes advancing and then returning in a precise typewriter fashion before handing the note back. Then the assistant would leave again. But now he appeared to be here for good. His finger on the console that made agony travel all over Lily's body. Tiny wireless electrodes seemed to be strapped everywhere. They hadn't put one between her legs yet, but Lily felt certain that they would get there in time. She had no idea how long she'd been in this room. There was no time, only the lulls that the accountant gave her. She felt sure to contemplate what he might do next. She could have asked him for the date, but even that seemed like it might alert him that something was going on, that time mattered somehow. She was trying to hold on until the 1st of September. But in truth, it could already have been the 5th or the 6th, for all Lily knew. Her muscles throbbed, her hand throbbed. They had stitched the wound in her scalp, but no one had tended to her hand, and the burning hole in her palm had blackened and then crisped over with pus like a crust on a filthy pie. The assistants' comings and goings were the only way to mark the passage of time. Sometimes the accountant would leave the room as well, shutting off the lights. Another purposeful manoeuvre, Lily was sure, leaving her alone in the dark. And yet, she was not alone. With every hour that went by, Lily became more aware of the other woman. She came and went, sometimes merely flickering on the edge of Lily's consciousness, and sometimes right there. The feeling was nothing Lily could explain to anyone, even herself. But nevertheless, the woman was there, just beyond the thin veil, feeling Lily's pain, her fright, her exhaustion. And this woman was strong. Lily could sense that strength, like a great lamp shining in the darkness. She was strong the way William Tyr was strong, and that strength buoyed Lily up, kept her from opening her mouth and screaming out the answers the accountant wanted to hear. As the hours went on, Lily became more and more certain of something else. This woman knew about the better world. She had seen it, understood it, longed for it with all her heart. "Who are you?" Lily wanted to ask. But then the assistant pressed the button again, and it was all she could do to cling to the other woman, like a child to its mother's knees, begging for solace. When the electricity was on, Lily forgot all about the better world. There was only pain, white-hot agony that flared beneath her skin, wiping everything else away. Except the woman. Lily tried to think of Maddie, Dorian, Jonathan, Tyr, but she could feel herself wearing down. Several times, the pain had ceased just when she was at the point of begging them to stop. She thought of her old life when she used to be afraid of bee stings, and the thought made her giggle, a dark and senseless giggle that died on its way to the walls of the room, this room that was the only thing left.
"Keep on laughing, Lily. You can end this at any time."
The accountant's voice betrayed irritation. He was growing tired, Lily thought, and this gave birth to new hope. At some point, wouldn't he have to go away and sleep? They could give her to someone else, of course, another interrogator, but the accountant didn't strike her as the sort who would let go. He was a hunter, waiting patiently for the moment when she would break. And he wouldn't want the satisfaction of that moment to go to anyone else, not when he had done so much to loosen the lid. The pain stopped, and Lily's entire body sagged with relief. Earlier, she had been trying to think of positive things to cling to, and at this odd moment, one occurred to her. She didn't have children. If she had, these people would certainly have made use of them by now. She wondered whether Mom was in some kind of custody, whether they had come to the nice suburban neighborhood in Media and hauled Mom away. "Come on now, Lily. You know you'll give it up sooner or later. Why prolong this? Wouldn't you like some food? Wouldn't you like me to let you sleep?" Lily said nothing, noting with relief that the assistant was standing up and leaving the console. The accountant was a busy man. His assistant was constantly fetching him messages, and Lily thought he must have many other projects. But God help her, she had his full attention now. Behind the glasses, those round, bird-like eyes pinned her where she sat. "Tell me a little something, Lily, and I'll give you a break for a while. Just tell me why you went to the Connolly Terminal the other night." Lily felt her consciousness beginning to waver. Her vision had blurred again. There could be no harm in answering the accountant's question. After all, he already knew, didn't he? "Focus." Lily's mind sharpened for a moment. Those words were not Dorian's, not Maddie's. And now she realized that she was actually hearing the other woman, her thoughts inside Lily's mind so tightly wrapped that Lily might have mistaken them for her own. The other night. It definitely wasn't August 30th anymore. Had William Tyr and his people gotten away? Lily would have given her life for the correct date, but she couldn't ask. The assistant left the room, the door booming closed. And for no reason at all, Lily suddenly thought of her father, who had died years ago. Dad had hated President Frewell, hated the proliferation of security offices in each city and town. But there was no organized resistance then. Dad had been a fighter, with nothing to fight for, no one to fight with. Dad would have liked William Tyr, Lily realized now, her eyes stinging with tears. Dad would have fought for him.
"Last chance, my girl."
There would be no respite. Lily clenched her toes in preparation, grabbing the arms of the chair. The accountant sat down and smiled pleasantly at her, a predator's smile in a bureaucrat's face, then clucked in mock concern.
"Tell me, Lily, whatever turned a nice woman like you into a cunt like this?"
He reached for the console, and the lights went out. For a long moment, Lily could only hear her harsh, frightened breathing in the darkness. Then she heard shouts and cries in the hallway outside, muffled by the metal door. Beneath her feet, the ground trembled, and Lily was seized with a joy, a fierce joy that bordered on ecstasy in the dark. "September 1st," her mind exulted. She knew suddenly that it had come, the end of the old, diseased world. September 1st! Somewhere, far away, an alarm began to squawk. More muffled screams echoed from the hallway. The accountant's chair scraped back, and Lily drew up into a ball, expecting him to find her at any moment. She could hear the grating crunch of his feet on the concrete floor, but whether he was near or across the room, Lily couldn't tell. She began to feel her way around the arms of her chair, looking for a sharp edge, a nail, anything, tugging as hard as she could against the short reach of the handcuffs. This was her only chance, and if she didn't take it, if they managed to get the lights back on, the pain might go on forever. The door thrummed, a deep metal gonging sound, and Lily jumped, banging her head against the back of the chair. Several sharp beeps punctuated the darkness, a gun being loaded. Lily could find no sharp edges on the arms of the chair. Of course not, she thought. Of course there wouldn't be. And so she began to work on one of the handcuffs that bound her to the chair's arms. She was fine-boned with thin wrists, but no matter what she did, the cuff wouldn't slip off the protrusion below her thumb. She continued to pull at it, not stopping even when she felt the first trickle of blood. Sometime in the last 48 hours, Lily had discovered the great secret of pain. It thrived on the unknown, on the knowledge that there was a greater pain out there, something more excruciating that might yet be reached. The body was constantly waiting. When you took away the uncertainty, when you controlled the pain yourself, it was infinitely easier to bear. And Lily yanked at the handcuff, gritting her teeth, hissing the pain away through pursed lips. The door boomed again, a much deeper sound, metal hitting metal. And a moment later, the hinges burst apart, emitting a silver rectangle of light from some sort of halo device. When Lily was little, they used to take such lights camping. But this one was infinitely brighter, turning the door into a rectangular sun in the darkness. Lily threw up her hand to cover her eyes, but it was too late. She was already blind, her eyes burning, leaking salt. The room was full of gunfire, quick, sharp clicks and the metallic ping of bullets bouncing from metal walls. A thin slice of pain tore across Lily's bicep. The backs of her eyelids seemed to be on fire.
Mrs. M.
A hand clasped her shoulder, shook her hard. But even when Lily opened her eyes, all she could see was white fire. Jonathan?
Hold still for a minute.
Lily held still. There was one sharp crack of metal, then another, impacts that reverberated all the way up her arms.
There. You're out. Come on.
I can't see.
I can, but I can't hold you up. You need to walk.
Lily let him pull her to her feet, though pins and needles awoke roaring in her feet and calves. She stumbled along, Jonathan's arm tucked behind her shoulders. To her left, she heard a gagging rattle, the sound of someone choking. She could see shadows now, bright beams of flashlights in the darkness. The choking intensified, becoming a loud gargling sound that made Lily wince. And then it ceased.
"We have to go!"
A voice squealed so high and panicky that Lily couldn't tell whether it was a man or a woman.
"They're bringing the secondary backups online. The power's already on in Building C."
"Keep your pants on," a woman drawled.
And Lily swung toward the voice, though all she could see was another bright blue shadow.
"Dorian?"
"Come on, Mrs. M." Jonathan took her arm, pulling her along. "Gotta move. Time is short."
"Is it September 1st?
But there was no time for her to ask. They hustled her out the door. Lily skinned her elbow on the busted frame on the way out, but said nothing, and down the hallway, which was still dark. Lily blinked continuously, trying to force her sight back. Scattered light arced across the hall, flashlights. And Jonathan's hand urged her to go faster. Lily heard pounding on the doors as they passed. People were still trapped in there, behind magnetic locks. And now Lily understood Jonathan's urgency. All security facilities were supposed to have several sources of emergency power in case of a failure. Dorian and Jonathan must have sabotaged more than one, but they had not killed them all. Beneath her feet, buried deep in the stone, Lily felt intermittent thumps as someone tried to bring the building back online. A figure stepped into the flashlight beam some 10 feet in front of them, and Lily halted, recognizing a security uniform. The man was big and rangy-looking, and he held up a huge black machine rifle, one that could fire either bullets or darts. Greg used something very similar whenever he went deer hunting with his cronies in Vermont.
"Where are you going with her?"
Behind Lily, someone snarled, a soft sound that made the hairs stand up on the back of her neck.
"She's being transferred to Washington."
Lily knew that voice. It was the accountant's assistant, the bald man who had spent most of the night with his hand on the console. He was on Jonathan's other side, still in his uniform. But when Lily screwed up her eyes to focus, she saw that his face was a grotesque white mask of panic. She was beyond surprise now, beyond reaction. The presence of the assistant merely registered, poking the bubble of her mind with a soft finger, then retreating.
On whose orders? Special orders, from Major Langer.
But the assistant's voice was unsteady,
and the guard wasn't buying it, even Lily could tell.
Dimly, outside the glow of their flashlights, she spotted someone moving down the hallway wall, a sliding shadow in the darkness.
Where is Langer?
He's writing his report. The assistant licked his lips, and Lily heard the dry rasp of his tongue.
I'm supposed to take her outside to the car. Who are these others?
The shape on the wall launched itself onto the guard, knocking him to the ground. The gun chattered as the guard went down, bullets pinging off the walls and floors. Jonathan's arm dropped away from Lily's back, and she heard the thud of his body hitting the ground. Jonathan's flashlight had fallen to the concrete, and in the dim light she saw William Tear, his knee planted in the guard's stomach, both thumbs jammed into the man's eyes. Lily grabbed the discarded flashlight and shone it around until she found Jonathan's feet. The guard screamed, making her jump, and the light jigged crazily around the hallway. For a moment, Lily was back in her nightmares, in that other hallway with its endless doors. Shine it up! Dorian grabbed the flashlight from her, focusing it on Jonathan's stomach. Ah, damn! A narrow trench of blood, sparkling almost black, stained Jonathan's shirt just above his belt buckle. Lily's vision crystallized, the warm bubble around her mind evaporating.
Help me pick him up.
Lily wrapped an arm around Jonathan's waist and helped Dorian haul him from the floor. Ahead in the darkness, the guard's screams ended suddenly, a strangled sound that cut off in a grunt.
Move!
William Tear shouted.
Jonathan needs a doctor, Dorian panted. Gut shot. There's no time. Parker's people will already be started.
I'm fine, Jonathan wheezed, his breath whistling against Lily's neck.
Come on, South Carolina.
Dorian hauled him forward and Lily followed suit, trying not to jostle him.
You, Salter, Tear snapped. Get the door open.
The assistant rushed past Lily, his flashlight bobbing with each stride toward the door at the end of the hallway. Just as he reached it, the lights came back on in a bright flash, blinding them all. Lily stumbled, nearly pitching Jonathan forward to the floor.
Move! Tear roared. We're out of time!
The assistant had the door open. Lily and Dorian hauled Jonathan forward out into the cool night and up the long metal staircase. It seemed like years since Lily had arrived at this place, and for a moment she wanted nothing so much as to sink down and fall asleep on the steps. Better world be damned. But then she felt resistance, even from her own limbs. The other woman was there, pushing her up the steps. At the top was a parked car, a sleek silver Lexus with a security shield on the hood. The rest of the buildings in the compound were still dark, but even as Lily watched, one bank of lights came back on, far across the pavement.
Boss, Dorian muttered. She's still tagged. We'll deal with it in the car. Get Jonathan in.
The assistant, Salter, was waiting by the open passenger side door, his face both terrified and pathetically eager. As they approached, he bugled,
"The better world!" "Shut up!" Tear hissed.
"I helped."
"So you did."
Tear passed Jonathan to Lily. She saw the glint of murder in Tear's eyes, but said nothing, merely opened the rear door and helped Dorian maneuver Jonathan into the back seat.
"You helped us at the 11th hour, wanting to get to the better world."
"Yes?"
In one quick movement, Tear grabbed the back of Salter's head and smashed his face into the hood of the car. When he pulled Salter back up, the man's features were nothing but a bloody mask.
"Think on them, Salter," Tear murmured. "All of my people you've helped to break over the years. I wouldn't let you within 100 miles of the better world."
He flung Salter away. Lily looked across the compound, at the miles of fencing that seemed to surround everything. If the power came back on, how were they going to get out?
This was going to be a trick, even with Jonathan behind the wheel.
Tyr shook his head, biting at the inside of his cheek.
I need to work on Jonathan. Take out her tag. Dorry, can you drive? I'll get us there. Get in.
Tyr slipped into the back seat. Lily opened the passenger door, then froze as an explosion ripped through the tree line on her left, several miles beyond the security compound. An orange fireball bloomed in the dark, illuminating the silhouettes of infinite trees before they were consumed in flames.
Into the car, now!
She got in and slammed the door. Dorian floored it, and the Lexus roared forward across the pavement. Tyr turned on the overhead light.
20 degrees left, Dorry. The fifth segment from the end. I know, boss. I know.
Dorian nudged the wheel to the left. Another bank of lights came on above them, and Lily saw that they were heading toward the perimeter fence, doing 40 now, their speed still increasing. Lily thought of electrocution, then dismissed it from her mind. Tyr would take care of these things, the way he seemed to take care of everything. Metal hammered behind her, bullets puncturing the trunk and back bumper. The car skewed, and Dorian fought with the steering wheel, cursing a steady slew of profanity that would have made Maddie proud. A groan came from the back seat. Tyr had produced his little black bag and was kneeling on the floorboards, bent over Jonathan's midsection. Lily was glad she couldn't see the wound, for she already sensed how things would play out. Jonathan had saved her, twice now, and in return, she had gotten him killed.
It's bad. Tyr shook his head. Have to wait until we're on the highway, until we're steady.
He moved Jonathan's legs and perched on the seat.
Lily, lean forward.
Lily started, realizing that he had used her first name, carelessly, just the way he would speak to Dorian or Jonathan. She wanted to smile, but then she felt Tyr rip her shirt down the back. The car hit the fence. All security fences were supposed to be titanium, but this section seemed to crumple away from the posts as though it had been weakened somehow. Dorian yanked the wheel left, and the car peeled sideways, skidding. And then they were on the egress road, speeding away. Lily turned and saw the compound through the rear windshield, a wide wash of light and stone and steel shrinking behind them. Then she jumped, startled, as something cold was smeared across her shoulder blade.
I usually give a local for this, Lily, but I'm going to need my whole supply for Jonathan. Can you be brave?
Lily giggled, but it came out as a croak. Brave had been many, many hours ago. She didn't know where she was now, wandering in uncharted territory. She gritted her teeth, readying herself, and tried to think of something else.
Why did you kill the assistant?
Salter. You know men like Salter, Lily. He's the sort who can think of an excuse for almost anything he's done. Salter thought that one good deed could make up for a lifetime of terrible acts.
Cut it?
Lily shut her eyes tight as something thin and cold pierced the skin of her shoulder blade.
She didn't know why they had rescued her. Would they let her come with them to the better world? She hadn't even done one good deed. Not really.
The pain was bad, but she pursed her lips. What if even a small wrong move could tip the balance? Holding them shut.
Depends on the deed and the lifetime. In this case, no. Salter's been Langer's right-hand man for nearly 20 years.
Major Langer, Lily realized. The man in charge.
The accountant.
No roadblocks yet, Dorian remarked, her gaze pinned straight ahead. That's something. But there's a lot of fire. Parker, Tyr replied dismissively. That bunch is ridiculously impressed by loud noises.
The sharp instrument worked inside Lily's shoulder. She couldn't stop a small moan from escaping her throat.
Not much longer, Lily.
A spray can hissed, and burning cold spread across her open shoulder.
Thank Christ Parker and his crew never knew what else we had. But I'll bet 100 quid most of the eastern seaboard's on fire before the night is through.
Why? Lily gasped, as another sharp point sank into the muscle of her shoulder. Why would you let him do that? Tyr grunted.
Hold very still, Lily. Tricky fucker.
Lily thought he had ignored her question, but a moment later he replied,
This country is diseased. The fortunate celebrate on the backs of the starving, the ill, the terrorized. The law affords no recourse to the disadvantaged. That's a historical sickness, and there's only one cure. But I won't lie to you, Lily. We need the diversion as well.
Tyr left her shoulder for a moment, and there was a clink of metal.
Little fuckers buried deep in the muscle. Inept doctor. Must have hurt like mad when they put it in.
Lily blinked in surprise, realizing that she didn't remember having her tag implanted. It had been done sometime during her childhood, she knew. But now the tag seemed like something that had always been there, a natural part of her anatomy. She had learned to be tagged, in the same way they had all learned to be under constant surveillance, not to speak of the disappeared. A historical sickness. Why did you get me out?
The better world is not free, Lily. I test my people. Dorry, keep it steady here. Sir!
There was a final deep stab into Lily's muscle, and she screeched against her clamped teeth. Another cold tug, and the invasion finally withdrew. Tyr presented the tag for Lily's inspection. A tiny piece of metal, so tiny that it would have fit comfortably on her pinky fingernail. Marvelling, Lily held out her hand, and Tyr dropped the tag into her palm.
"Controls your whole life, Lily. Do us a favour and toss it out the window."
After staring at the tiny metal ellipse for another moment, Lily rolled the window down and threw her tag into the night.
"Feel better, Mrs. M?"
She turned to stare at Jonathan, ignoring the fierce pain in her shoulder. He was smiling, but his face was pale beneath its dark skin, and his entire shirt front gleamed with blood. "I'm so sorry." Jonathan waved his hand.
"I'll be fine."
But Lily knew better. Saying sorry again seemed ridiculously inadequate, and so she didn't repeat it, only turned to stare out the windshield, hating herself. The night landscape bloomed with fire from horizon to horizon, many towns burning behind their walls. Something else was different, but it wasn't until they got on the freeway heading south that Lily was able to pinpoint the difference. She hadn't seen a single electric light since they'd left the security compound. "You shut down the power."
"Every cell,"
Tyr replied, digging in his medical bag.
"It's not coming back on, either. The east is dark, all the way from New Hampshire to Virginia. How's our time, Dorry?"
10 minutes ahead of schedule."
"Stay on public highways. With any luck, Parker's people will be looking for bigger game on the private roads."
Tyr began to bandage Lily's shoulder, applying some sort of salve.
It stung, but Lily barely noticed. She was too busy staring out the window, her eyes full of orange flame.
"Carnival," she thought.
She didn't want to imagine what was happening out there, in the world beyond this car.
Everyone she knew lived behind a wall, her mother, her friends. Lily suddenly felt that she was staying afloat atop a pile of corpses, that this guilt would stay with her, with all of them, even Tyr, poisoning what it touched, poisoning the better world. "None of us escape," Lily realized bleakly, then shut her eyes, wincing at the sounds from the back seat, as Tyr went to work on Jonathan. "None of us is clean." Kelsey woke to find herself in the dark, lying on a cold stone floor. Her shoulder was aching, but whether it was Lily's memories or her own old wound, she didn't know. She felt cheated. How could she be here now without seeing the end of the story? Lazarus! There was no answer. Kelsey scrambled to her feet and then fell down again, scraping her knees on the stone. The darkness felt as though it stretched forever around her. Lazarus! She screamed.
Thank fucking Christ! Mace shouted.
His voice was distant, muted by dead space.
Keep talking, lady.
Here? The glimmer of a torch appeared far off, and Kelsey pulled herself to her feet, wandering toward it, her hands outstretched against obstacles. But there was nothing, only the vast dark space around her. As Mace approached, she saw that his face was white and strained, his eyes wide in the torchlight.
I thought I'd lost you, lady.
What?
One moment you were on the ground making a racket, and the next you were just gone. I've been looking for you at least half an hour.
Maybe I rolled away in the dark. Mace laughed bitterly.
No, lady. You were gone.
Then why am I back? She nearly asked, but held quiet, recognizing the selfishness of the question. She was back because there were things to do before the morning, before she walked into death. Only crossing, she whispered, taking comfort in the words, though she didn't know what they meant. It was time to talk to Rove Finn. All was quiet as they approached the Queen's Wing. Kelsey hoped that everyone had gone to bed, for it would make this easier if she only had to say goodbye to the night guard. But here she was mistaken, for when the double doors opened, she found her entire guard, more than 30 of them, still awake, with pen in front. Andalai was waiting too, as neatly put together as though she'd had a full night's sleep. Even Isha was there, though Kelsey noted that she did not stand with her mother. She stood with the guard. Kelsey took a deep breath. The rest of them would be easier to lie to than Mace. But she worried about Andalai, who always saw through everything. At dawn, I'm going down to the bridge to try and open negotiations with the Mort.
With what, lady? Corin asked. You have nothing to offer.
Lazarus will decide who comes with me, she continued, ignoring him. Four guards, no more.
Elston, Mace announced. Myself?
His eyes roamed the room for a moment before fixing on Isha.
And you, Hellcat. The Mort are tricky bastards. I want your knife.
This was nonsense, but seeing the way Isha's face lit up in the torchlight, Kelsey said nothing. Recognizing Mace's words as a gift, a kindness, just as she had shown to Ewan. She scanned the rows of guards and found Ewan stationed near one end. She had been prepared to send him back down to the dungeon if Mace demanded it, but he had not.
The guard could have reacted to Ewan in many different ways, but they had taken him in, much in the manner of a mascot, giving him responsibility in minor matters, innocuous errands where he could do no harm. Venna clapped Isha on the back and murmured in her ear, and she scampered off down the hallway.
And Corin.
Several guards gasped. Penn stared at Mace, his face turning pale. Kelsey's heart ached for him, but she understood that she could not get involved in this.
More.
As Penn began to argue with Mace in furious whispers, she saw that she was being handed an opportunity. She turned and hurried down the hall to her chamber, relieved when no one tried to follow, and bolted the door shut behind her. The fire in her chamber was still going. Andalai, thorough as ever, had tended it throughout the night. Kelsey sat down on the hearth, staring into the flames, willing Roe Finn to come.
But where would he come from?
Kelsey wished she understood, for it seemed like it might matter. She felt exhausted, as though she had travelled countless miles, the weight of Lily's life on top of her own. She longed to go back to Lily, to see the rest of the story. But there was no time. It was 4:15, and dawn was coming.
Kelsey balled her hand into a fist, digging the nails in until